Welcome to Hevre Connect. I'm Zach Garber, your host and a current Hevre member. In this podcast, you will get the opportunity to learn about the incredible Cabinet Young Leadership Program. We will explore the stories of fellow Cabinet members, alumni of the program, and educational series about the Jewish Federations. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and local Jewish Federation. Enjoy. Just to be together.
We feel like social media is real life, and it's just not. We so easily allow ourselves to forget that having a conversation face-to-face with somebody over dinner and a glass of wine couldn't be more different than battling some troll on an Instagram comment. I mean, it's just not real. People are much less divided in real life than they are on the internet. There's way more that unites us as human beings than divides us.
Today, I'm very excited to have another episode of Hevre Connect. I have the honor and privilege of interviewing Jonah Platt. I actually had the honor and privilege of interviewing Jonah's mom first, but I do get Jonah now. Jonah is a current Hevre member. You may be familiar with his podcast, Being Jewish. And on this podcast, we share the stories about why people are so passionate and excited about being Jewish that they want to give of their time and give back kind of at the peak of their careers while they're building their family. So I'm really excited to interview Jonah because outside of his professional world, which included acting, singing, doing a lot of very talented things that I cannot do, he is also spending his time talking about the Jewish world. So Jonah, thanks so much for coming on. I think a great starting point would be just to learn a little bit about yourself and your background.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. I have spent most of my career in entertainment, writing, acting, all the things from Broadway to Hollywood, and was doing mostly that for about 20 years and began doing some sort of Jewish social advocacy just kind of naturally and organically in the spring of 21. There was some violence between Israel and Gaza, and I was using my platform to help people make sense of it, explain it, articulate things I felt like people were thinking and feeling, and the response was positive. So I continued to do that, but on a very ad hoc hobby basis until October 7th, when I found that was really all I wanted to do was be online, engaging with people, helping educate and clarify things for people, listening to people. And after a couple months of spending all my time and energy doing that, I felt, okay, I want to get back to sort of my advocacy mission, which is really about Jewish empowerment, getting people to take ownership and pride in their identity, really lean into it and do something about it. And it felt like a podcast was the best way for me to go about that, to expand on the conversations I was having online, to normalize Jews openly having complicated Jewish conversations in a way that was relatable and not lame, not, you know, just rabbis talking Torah, not overly academic or scholarly, just real talk. And that it was cool and interesting and not a heady or nerdy. And wanted to really showcase the diversity of Jewish identity. That's really important to me. Big pillar of all of my work is that inclusivity. We come in so many different shapes and sizes and colors, and wanted to make sure my show really spotlighted all of those things.
Amazing. So tell us a little bit more about your show, what it is that you are doing with it. And, you know, there are a lot of people that want to talk about what's going on in the Jewish world. There aren't that many people that start a podcast and end up doing it professionally.
I wanted to create a space to expand on the things I was already thinking and talking about online, and the podcast allows me to do that in a more expansive way. And I want to make sure that we're having conversations that are relatable to folks, that people can see themselves in these conversations. It can be very comforting to see that other people are thinking and feeling the same things you are, especially when they're notable professionals that perhaps you look up to or are interested by. I'm trying to educate folks, not just on the issues, because we do plenty of that, but also on, again, the types of Jews there are, the richness of Jewish identity. There's so many, you know, I there's a reason that I have, you know, a tramp Jew in an episode, and then a crypto Jew, and then a Latino Jew, and a Haredi Jew, and Jewish authors and actors and chefs. You know, there's so many different ways to be Jewish. And now more than ever, I think we need to be embracing everybody and our allies too, our non-Jewish allies who want to stand by us and are very much committed to the fight alongside us. So important to hear from them as well for a number of reasons.
Yeah. And one of the things that I love, you know, having gotten to know you and having listened to way too many hours of you and your podcast is that you talk. Yeah, exactly. Right. You talk about being proud to be Jewish. And, you know, I think right now you bring up the J word, as I'll call it, and people are talking about anti-Semitism. This is a bad time in history. There's all these issues out there, and there's a lot of truth in that. But I want to talk about why you're so optimistic and excited about today's time.
Yeah, I mean, we are more connected globally as Jews than we've ever been. Within the chaos, let me take a step back. You know, we had Parsha Bereshit a couple weeks ago. And actually, I was on a Zoom with a Black pastor here in Los Angeles, a couple of different folks, but he was one. And he offered this little piece of scripture that, you know, before the world was created, there was tohu bavohu, there was chaos. And that chaos wasn't the end of the story, it's the beginning of the story. It's what creation and beauty and order came out of. It's what our whole world came out of. And so it's important to remember that out of the chaos of this moment, so much great stuff is going to happen and is already happening. The way that Jews are becoming more engaged, new initiatives and innovation are happening. There's just a whole new opportunity for us as a people to do things differently and to correct the mistakes we've been making as a global community, to learn from them and try new stuff. And bring more and more people into the fold. And so I feel very inspired by this time and all the people that I see getting engaged and wanting to take part in this new movement.
So I want to talk about getting engaged. I think there's this feeling of helplessness with social media and things going on, you know, and also we're in divided times, right? There's no way around it. You know, people identify as this or that, and it's very hard to have these conversations with people. I really enjoyed your episode on the four C's for anyone who didn't hear it, but I'm just curious, how do we constructively engage? I mean, you're engaging with people that you barely even know. You're a stranger, let alone, you know, family members, other things, you know, on these topics.
Yeah, I think we're so much more capable of doing that than we allow ourselves to believe. I think we really have gotten into this unhealthy, untrue mindset where we feel like social media is real life, and it's just not. We so easily allow ourselves to forget that having a conversation face-to-face with somebody over dinner and a glass of wine couldn't be more different than battling some troll on an Instagram comment. I mean, it's just not real. People are much less divided in real life than they are on the internet. There's way more that unites us as human beings than divides us. And most people, even if they are divided in certain lanes of thought, like it all comes from people doing what they think is right or what they think is best for the most part. And when you get in actual conversation with somebody and allow those things to be at the fore, you could talk about anything. I mean, we're very capable of having touchy conversations that we can separate out from ourselves and our relationships. I had one recently. I had a 4-hour dinner with a dear friend of mine from college who I love dearly and who comes at the Israel stuff from a very different perspective than me and sort of, you know, is very left and progressive, but in such an understandable and genuine way. And like, she's seeing the stuff that's it's propaganda, but you don't know it's propaganda. You don't know it's propaganda. It seems completely legitimate to her, and it's shaped her view of things. And we just talked about it, and I listened to her, and she was actually an inspiration for me in one of the monologues I did on my show. And it was a really healthy, lovely conversation. And when it was over, we like hung out at my house, and it friend stuff. It just like didn't have to go beyond. And we were respectful, right? Like she checked in with me. She was like, "Are you okay?" And we keep going. It was just very much, oh, we're friends and we want to talk about this stuff because it feels important, but like we're friends. And we shouldn't underestimate our ability to do that for each other.
How do you find, I mean, there are different people that you have conversations with, right? If we're thinking about other cabinet people, things like that, you know, everybody has someone in their family that has different points of views and sometimes points of views that can be destructive. And, you know, I don't know if you deal with this in your personal life, but how to engage people with caring to, you know, maybe not come around to what you think is your point of view, but to engage with what is not propaganda, what is the reality of the situation and an understanding of why we should be proud to be Jewish, how we can be supporters of Israel in these times and some of these questions that you see both from the far left and from the far right.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I will say it takes two to tango, right? So even if you show up to a conversation in good faith with care and respect, and you want to get into the weeds with somebody, if they don't want to do that, you can't do it and you can't force it. Again, that's why like it's so much easier to do it in person. It's really the only way. I've had very successful conversations in person that I've then tried to continue like, oh, what about this later after the fact via text or sending links and articles or whatever. And generally it doesn't work just because people are busy. You've lost that window. Other things are influencing. It's just hard to do. You have to have engagement from both sides. You have to go delicately. And I think a really key thing to, you have to make peace with the idea that you may never change, like you're not there to change this person's mind. You shouldn't go in with that agenda because it may never happen. And you can't go into every interaction with this person, like with a sense of disappointment and frustration. It has to be an acceptance of, like, assume this person's never going to change. And all you're doing is talking about something you find interesting. That's good conversation fodder, you know, and not a life or death thing. And I get that's different for different people. Again, you're talking about destructive. If you're somebody who's, you know, I have horror stories from friends who are like, you know, telling this person is blowing up our family gatherings and storming out of the house and, you know, leaving everyone in tears. That's a different conversation. I mean, that's really serious. I'm talking about the ones where it hasn't gotten there and shouldn't get there if you're being able to honor each other's points of views and hear each other out and at least try to understand where the person's coming from as much as you can. But again, it can only go so much. A lot of these people who have these positions, it's not really that important to. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. And like they only really want to engage as much as it is to sort of stake a claim to a position, but they don't actually want to get deep into it because they don't actually think about it on that deep a level. That makes it tough. It reminds me sometimes, and I've experienced this with a couple people in my life. It's like that friend you have from childhood who you, every time you're in town where they are, you hit them up, let's hang out, I'm in town. And when they come to town, they don't hit you up. You're calling them on their birthday. Hey, it's, you know, I want to say, but they don't call you. And after a certain point, you're like, look, friend from childhood, I love you. I can't put any more time and energy into this because it's not coming both ways. I'll always love you. I got no ill will, but like, I'm going to release this need to engage with you and this need to feel something back from you. I'm going to release that from my life. I'm going to set myself free from that. And you go with God. And if you ever want to talk to me, I'm here, but I'm not going to give you any more rent-free space in my brain and my heart on this stuff. And sometimes we just have to come to terms with that.
So we have a whole ton of people from cabinet who are spending their time engaged on the lay leader side, professional side, for somebody who's interested in really being active and promoting being Jewish and healthy awareness and advocating on behalf of our community around anti-Semitism, other things going on, what do you think are the biggest scalable ways for someone to really make an impact and engage?
That's a great question. It's probably the most important question. And I would say, like, the biggest difference between someone who makes an impact and someone who doesn't is effort. I mean, I'll have people who come to me and go like, hey, if I can, like, let me know about blank, blank, blank. And like, if your advocacy is based on someone else telling you, hey, you should advocate in this way, or, you know, telling you what to do, it's just, you're not going to be able to have an impact. You have to say to yourself, okay, what can I control? What's my skill set? What's my sphere of influence? And I'm not talking about like, oh, I have X number of followers on a platform. I mean, some of the examples I give are like, bring Hanukkah's coming up. Be the person in your office that brings latkes into the office and teaches your colleagues what the Hanukkah story is, why it's important, why we do it, why it's weird that America makes us compare it to Christmas just because it's at the same time at the calendar. Like, be the ambassador. Like, that's advocacy. You don't have to start a nonprofit to be an ambassador of the Jewish people to the people around you. You could start a nonprofit. That would be awesome. But it's the way, big and small. Invite someone over for Shabbat. Like, if you haven't done Shabbat in a long time, invite anyone over. It can be a Jew. It can be a non-Jew. Just doing that exercise, like bringing it more into your life and bringing it into someone else's life. That's having an impact. You did something that somebody else felt. I can go on and on. I mean, give to a fundraiser, start your own fundraiser. There's a million ways to be involved. It's really about taking the hour, the week, the month to marinate on it and think like, okay, what am I super passionate about? What feels doable for me in this moment? What can I actually do well with my skills and my, even if your only skill is energy? And like, that's like, there are a lot of people who just stumble into stuff because they're like, I got to be doing something. So I'm going to start X. I'm going to start Y. I'm going to start going volunteering at this place. Like, just get off your butt and do something. I have a friend who, like, her thing now is she keeps hosting these volunteer sessions at this awesome food kitchen in LA called One Big Kitchen LA, OBK. Like, seasonally, she's done like 5 this year. I don't know. But like, she's not out there necessarily like marching around with an Israeli flag, but she keeps trying to give back to the community and bring other people together around that action. Like, that's impactful. That's amazing. And not everyone's going to have the same scale. Not everybody's going to reach a million people, but you don't have to. It all matters right now. We just need to be normalizing Jews, living Jewishly, taking up space Jewishly, showing others around us that, like, here's what Jews are, here's what we look like, here's what we do, doing that openly and unabashedly and with our heads held high. That will ultimately be the determining factor to, you know, whether we are respected as a people in this country or not, is do we take up space and demand respect because this is who we are and this is what we do and we're not going anywhere.
So one of the things I wanted to talk about, you know, on this podcast, a lot of people similar to you have young kids, they've started their families, they're trying to grow in their careers, and they've limited amounts of time to really dedicate and focus on things. You've chosen to do Cabinet with your time. On this podcast, we highlight why people have chosen to be part of Cabinet, what that experience looks like. I'm sure you're being pulled in all sorts of directions. So I think it would be really helpful to understand, like, why you're doing this and what your experience has been and kind of your hope for success as part of a Hevre member.
Yeah. I mean, and I've said this before in other conversations, you know, everybody's, just like anything, like, why anybody joins Cabinet is different from person to person. Obviously, there's a lot of overlap, but it's never going to look the same for absolutely everybody. For me, I love that it's not a crazy time commitment. You know, it's, if you really want to play it on, it's one weekend at the beginning of 5 years, and then you could never show up to anything ever again if you wanted. I don't know why you do that, but that's an option. But for me, I think of it as two commitments a year. The retreat, domestic retreat, and the international mission. And like, certainly I can give 10 days a year to something when I get a lot out of it. And for me, it's making Jewish friends all across the country. It's already paid dividends for me because I go around, I do speaking engagements all over the country. And now whatever city I go to, there are cabinet people there. And it's been awesome to have people showing up. You know, I did a gig in Columbus, Ohio. And if I'd done that gig a year ago, I would have known nobody. And instead, I got picked up from the airport by someone from my Hebra and had other cabinet people come to my event. And that was awesome. And, you know, the opportunity to travel internationally with other Jews as adults. I mean, it's like getting summer camp as a going on a teen tour, except you're 40. I just think it's awesome. And having people that you know you can engage with on, like, we're all thinking, as you mentioned, like, we all have jobs, we all have kids, we all have all that stuff. Now you have all these peers you can talk about this stuff with and engage on and share ideas about and share recommendations about. You should do this program. Oh, I use this service in Chicago. I, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's just, there's so much good to it. I really am glad that I'm in it. And I recommend it to the people in my life who I feel like are looking for more engagement Jewishly and like being in conversation and in community with other people who are prioritizing their Jewish identity in a meaningful way. It's just a really awesome situation.
I would also just add that it's fun. You know, these are like really heavy topics sometimes when we're talking about the Jewish community, right? Like my grandmother was a Holocaust survivor, and like our family jokes that like that's what we do for fun is like we watch these movies or we learn about the Holocaust. But it's also really important that we remember how much fun we have being Jewish, celebrating traditions, being around other people. I think the other piece is like as a source of inspiration, sometimes we need to meet somebody else who inspires us in terms of what they're doing. I'm curious, and maybe this is a tough question. Is there anyone you've met through the cabinet experience so far that's inspired you in some sort of way?
Ooh, I mean, everybody in cabinet inspires me. It honestly, like, it inspires me, like, because I think about this Jewish stuff all day long, right? Like, this is what I do. And then when I show up to convention and there's like hundreds of people who also care deeply about Jewish life and are involved in 1,000 different ways in their communities and nationally and this leadership and that and all the different things, like, that's very inspiring to me. It's so nice to see, you know, so much of my work is sort of solo. I think a lot of this can be in this space, but to come together and see 500 other people doing the same thing in different ways, in different cities, in different communities, is very inspiring to me.
So when you think 5 years out, right, you'll be done with your cabinet journey, what would you define as success of, you know, not just cabinet, but what you're doing with being Jewish and kind of your Jewish advocacy journey that you've been on so far?
Well, two different questions, right? So I guess for cabinet, like, I it's already successful for me, honestly. It's like doing what I hoped it would do, which is being fun, I love traveling and I love going to new places. So, you know, the next mission is in Greece, and then the next retreat's in Minneapolis, two places I've never been to. So love that. And I'm already making great friends and people all over the country. So check there. And then in terms of where I'm going to be, you know, pod wise and advocacy wise in 5 years, I have no idea. What I hope it is that it's well down the road from where I am right now. I hope I'm, you know, expanding my impact and what I'm able to offer in 10 different ways from where I am now. I feel like this show is the beginning of what I'm trying to do, the nexus of what the next 5 years of my work will look like. And I hope I'll be really have impacted even more people than the show already has on a much greater scale by that point.
Great. So I don't need to prognosticate what Rabbi Jonah is going to know in 5 years, but I'm curious, you know, from where you are from having started the podcast to where you are today, which has been a pretty wild journey. It's not been that long, you know, for what's been such a successful show. What have been the biggest learnings, takeaways from what you've been doing?
So many. It's hard to put a finger on. I mean, I've learned so much about, like, I've learned a lot of Jewish wisdom and text and stuff from, you know, I've been taught by some of my guests and by researching some of my guests and researching for various monologues and events that I've put on. So I'm more like learned in the Jewish scripture or Jewish wisdom sense, certainly, than I was 2 years ago. I mean, like, I didn't even really know what Shavuot was or Shemini Atzeret. Like, I know what those things are now. So that's sort of one piece of it. I'm learning about all different kinds of Jews, even as, you know, I'm basically, as I'm learning about them and being introduced to them, I'm then being like, oh, we got to do this on the show. So I'm only a step ahead a lot of the times from my viewers, in terms of hearing from these people on an intimate level and having a deep conversation. You know, I recently had an episode with a trans Jew, and I've not had the opportunity to sit for an hour with a trans Jew and really hear from them and understand their experience right from their mouth. So I learned through that a lot. I've had a couple of great authors on, so I've read some great books and learned a lot through that. And I just continue to learn humility really through it. Like, to me, the greatest sort of flaw of humanity is that we forget to be humble. I mean, we forget that we always think we've got it all figured out, whether it's our own identity, whether it's the way that we're evolving or maturing as a person. We starting from when you're like 16 years old, you're like, okay, I know myself to the core. And then like 3 years later, you're like, whoa, I didn't know any of this. And it's that with ourselves. It's that with like the amount of information and opinion that we form in this world. There's so many times we're like, okay, and now I've made up my mind about that. And then you learn something 5 seconds later that makes you need to open that back up again. And so I've certainly learned a great deal of humility through this, that no matter where I am on my evolution as a listener, as a convener, as a speaker, I always am being taught new things. I'm always being humbled. I'm always thinking I've got something figured out and then being shown otherwise. So I think that's really important to hold on to.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you personally, I feel like I'm always humbled. Maybe this is just a personal problem. It's through food. It's like every time I find something, like I think, you know, I've cooked something really good and I try something new, like, you know, you had Chef Mike on, or like the Babka King, and I find a new food and you just have that like gut reaction. I'm like, oh my God, how did I not have this before? It's just, you know, anyways. So on that topic, what is your favorite Jewish food?
I'll tell you what popped into my head just now when you asked it. My mother makes a like sweet cheese noodle kugel with cornflake kind of crust on top every breakfast. Mm. And it's so damn good.
That's amazing. So as somebody who's in the film world, who's dealing with media, Hollywood, all that, what is your favorite Jewish related media that you both enjoy and you think is also having the biggest impact on kind of pop culture?
So I can't speak for season 2, which just came out, which I have not watched yet because I have no time, but Nobody Wants This. I really loved season 1. I've talked about it a lot on my show. And I think culturally, it's exactly the kind of thing we need. Is it perfect? No, but nothing, things really are. And I love that it's introducing a whole audience of people, many of whom are not Jewish, to ideas like Havdalah and Jewish summer camp, and that you can be attractive and cool and young and be a rabbi, and that there are, you know, different kinds of ways to engage with contemporary Judaism. So again, it's not perfect, but I think it's doing a lot of subtle work that is the delivery method I think is most effective in humanizing Jews, which is what we really need our narrative media to be doing.
What are your favorite Jewish customs, traditions, experiences that you either do today in your household or that you, you know, hold deepest?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. We're a big Shabbat family. We make sure we do Shabbat every week, even if it's just doing, you know, the candles, Kiddush, challah, and then, you know, chaos breaks loose with my three kids. That's totally fine. But we always do it. And I'd say my favorite part of all of that is I like all of it. I mean, I love the candles. I think that's beautiful. And now that my daughter, who's almost three, I mean, she knows how to wave her hands and cover her eyes. It's so beautiful to watch that. I like doing part of I've talked on my show about going full Jew, sort of doing the thing that your gut wants to do that feels good to do Jewishly, but like your brain's like, that's annoying, that takes too long, that's lame, that's too Jewy, whatever. I've started doing the long Kiddush every Friday instead of the short one. I really like doing that because A, it makes me feel more Jewish in a good way, and B, it's my way of helping teach my kids what Shabbat is about, which is the whole point is to slow down, take up more time, be present, not be in a hurry. So I love doing that. And then I love blessing my kids on Shabbat, which is not something my parents did growing up that I always sort of wish they had. I just think it's a beautiful thing. And I love that moment with my kids every Friday.
I love that. And I'm working on practicing on that prayer myself for my daughter so that I can actually say it appropriately.
Write it down.
Yeah, exactly. So I have a couple questions from some Hevre that you know.
I love that.
Had to make sure I asked them. One was, what is your favorite question to ask in an interview?
I don't necessarily have one specific question that I ask. I really try to tailor the interview to the individual. And I like to ask not yes or no questions. I actually have banned them essentially from my show. I like to ask how questions and why questions and say more about this questions. So yeah, that's a long-winded way of saying there is no one thing that I ask every person. It's more about really getting specific. I think that's the way you get a good interview, is not being cookie cutter, but really finding what's fascinating about each person. And in my case, that person's Jewish identity and how that intersects with the other parts of their life, career-wise, family-wise, public life, the Israel and it all. So I like getting into the real talk, however we get there.
So the next question I have is, what news do you engage with? I know we have a Hevre that started Mo News, Moshe Nunu, that I had on this podcast, but you know, you mentioned propaganda, you mentioned what's going on. How do you inform yourself?
I look at a lot of different sources. I think that's the only way to do it today. I think if you're relying on, I'm going to get all my news from this paper, or all my news from these two Jewish influencers who are exactly politically aligned and post the same stuff, like you're not going to get the full picture. So like when it comes to Israel, I get the Haaretz newsletter and I get the Times of Israel newsletter in my inbox every day. I get Jewish Philanthropy, I get Jewish Insider, I get the Free Press, I get New York Times, I follow people on different parts of the spectrum Jewishly. You know, I follow Jews from the left, I follow Jews from the right, I follow Jews in the center. I get a lot of like the breaking news, I think as we all do, from social media, but then I'll always kind of verify it and see it from a couple places and make sure I can go deep with it before I have an opinion about it. So again, another long story short, the short answer is it's critical to be purposefully seeking out news from different places on the political spectrum, so you know the truth is somewhere in the middle. And you won't find it if you're only getting it from one side or the other.
Yeah, and speaking on being in the middle, and maybe this is a little bit of a tough question, somebody very concerned about Mamdani, along with some of the politicians on the far right that are associated with white supremacy. Like, how do we engage politically to advocate on behalf of our people? Certain people coming out there being truly anti-Zionist or being Nazism is cool, and sharing like where that line is, that no, this isn't politics, this is about our community safety, and how to make that a priority when that might not be the primary issue even.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I wish I had an easy answer. I think part of what you're pointing to is that maybe it's not the answer, right? Like, if Jews are shouting from the rooftops, like with Mamdani, hey, don't vote for this guy, and that's not changing people's minds, then you have to change the strategy. And that's more, as you allude to, engaging on the issues people really care about, which is rent and housing and transportation and cost of living. And if you're able to ding the guy on those merits, I think you probably have a stronger argument. And in terms of engaging, you know, it's critical that Jews are politically engaged in support of the people who support us and against the people who don't. I just don't think at this point in time we have the luxury. Like, I think it's very uncomfortable for liberal Jewish Democrats to have to think of themselves as perhaps turning into single issue voters, because it's just not the way we've had to operate in this country. We've generally, the Jewish community, I think it's what, like 70% of American Jews are Democratic, something like that. And that has always been based in a justice for all kind of mentality and advocating for this whole menu of things that fall under that liberal side. But now you've got your own and your children's and your community's well-being as one of the items on that list. And you've got a lot of people going, well, man, do I prioritize my own situation, or do I keep prioritizing everybody else's, like I like to do, but a man might not have the luxury to do at this moment. So it's a new frontier. And I think a lot of people have to grapple with and come to their own decision. I'll never tell anybody whether or not they should be a single issue voter. I don't think that's anyone's right to determine but yourself. But it's something you have to think about. And I mean, luckily we don't have a presidential election coming up, but we have some elections coming up, and people have to think, you know, it's just the time where I want to make sure that my family is safest and taken care of, or I'm good to, you know, roll the dice and keep focusing on outside myself and my community, because that's more important to me. It's hard to say. I think it's an individual decision, but definitely something people should be thinking about.
So on this podcast, we talk about, you know, why people are engaged Jewishly, why this work matters, and spending all this time, you know, just thinking about yourself, you know, you're doing this professionally in addition to your professional work that you're doing. Are there any pieces that we didn't touch on that you want to share?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'm just, I'm involved in a lot. I'm trying to expand what I'm doing in a lot of ways. I'm trying to get more into the in real life event space, finding different ways to convene Jews and non-Jews in profound ways that actually bring people together in a lasting way. Trying to build that out, and I'm learning as I go, like, what does that mean? What kind of infrastructure do I need? Kind of funding do I need to secure? What kind of personnel do I need to move beyond just the podcast? But beyond those efforts, it's all about the show and speaking around the country and continuing to do what I'm doing and keep doing it better.
So for someone who's listening who is a fan of the show, not a fan of the show, I mean, obviously they need to follow and listen to the show. That's first and foremost.
Please, that would be great.
But the bigger question is, how can they engage with you constructively and help further magnify the work that you're doing?
I appreciate that question. Number one, honestly, is to actually subscribe to the show. And I say that because I have a lot of people who enjoy the clips or pop into an episode here and there or whatever, even if you don't listen every week. When people click follow the show on Apple or Spotify and on YouTube, it makes my numbers higher, which then attracts advertisers more, which then allows me to hopefully bring in money, which allows me to then sustain the show. Because right now it's completely donor supported and I'm running out of dough. And the listenership is just, it's much lower than one would think. The level of exposure is quite high, but the actual listener numbers are low because a lot of people just haven't added that behavior into their lifestyle. And it really is helpful to me. Other than that, you know, in terms of engaging with me, I'm always engageable. I'm on social media a lot, specifically to check in with folks and hear what people have to say. And keep sharing the show with people. Keep talking about the show, you know, our conversations, make them your conversations at your dinner table, and then let me know about that. If you're involved with anything, any organization, if you're on any newsletter, if you're on Temple President, whatever, like, please include my show in your e-blasts and your meetings and your recommendations, things like that. You know, there are 15-something million Jews in the world. If I could get even 1% of those, I'd be in an awesome shape. But we're not there yet. So I can use all the help I can get.
We'll get there. And I can tell you personally, one of the things that people ask regularly is, you know, I don't know enough on a topic. I can't be the expert on all. What's really nice is there's a public Rolodex of episodes that you've done, from what does it mean to be anti-Zionist to the four C's of conversation, all these different topics where it's really hard for us to necessarily explain concisely, clearly, in a way that's fun to engage with. And I think you've done that. So I think you've done a real service for our community. I'll also just say, yeah, also just fanning out a little bit, Jonah and I met a couple different times, but, you know, he's a real person. He's part of cabinet. And it was so much fun seeing him in action. I don't know how else to describe it. You know, it's fun that we're doing this conversation, but I think engaging in real life, as you mentioned, I think the way that you work the room, you talk to people, you engage with them, those small interactions have a ripple effect of what's going on in the community. And I think, I genuinely believe that you're doing some of the most important work out there right now, making a difference in our community and nationally. And the goal of this show is really to highlight some of those voices in cabinet. And so I'm just honored and thrilled that you took the time to talk with us. And I know people are very excited for this episode. So thank you again.
Thanks, man. That's so kind. Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Time. Leaders step up to change lives, committed to helping others out. We hear the call and we respond in our hometowns and beyond. The Jewish future is what we are about. Just to be together. Just to be a role, take some courageous heart, take some courageous.